Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And I'm going to talk a little bit today about the Battle of Amiens in 1918. Considering its importance and significance, it's immensely overlooked, and most of the focus, particularly here in Britain, on World War One battles, is on the Somme. In France, most likely, the main focus is on Verdun. But Amiens itself is arguably of greater significance than both those battles. So in order to explain Amiens, we actually kind of need to go back to the crisis year of 1916, where the German army attacked Verdun relentlessly in order, as General Erich von Falkenhayn put it in his letter to the Kaiser the previous year on grand strategy, to bleed France white. Verdun has an almost sacred quality to French nationalism and French patriotism, and the French were willing to defend Verdun to the last man. And the Germans knew this, and they believed that they could put almost intolerable pressure on the French army and intolerable French pressure on the French Republic and cause it to collapse under the weight of losses. Falkenhayn said that essentially if France collapses, Britain will give up, and if Britain don't, we can continue to strangle the British Isles using U-boats. So this seemed like a good strategy. As far as Falkenhayn was concerned, the war on the East was all but won. He hadn't really reckoned with a rejuvenated, renewed Russian offensive in 1916. He thought that the Russians, after the battles of the Masurian Lakes and the Battle of Tannenberg, were all but done. So, as we know, Verdun is a stalemate for Germany. And the series of concentric battles, the Somme being one of them, and the Brusilov offensive on the Eastern Front being another, designed to squeeze Germany into surrender, and along with their ally Austria-Hungary and the Ottoman Empire and Bulgaria. These are stalemates as well. The Germans are, and the Austro-Hungarians are, able to hold the line, as are the Turks, effectively, and there is no collapse. The Somme is a, in the eyes of modern revisionist historians on the Somme, not so much the result of British lions led by donkeys, a much debunked idea now. Namely because the term was made up by historian and Tory party cad Alan Clark. He later admitted that it was an invention because it sounded good. Gary Sheffield, for example, has written various books on the Somme and on Haig, and suggests that whilst Haig may have been an inflexible and arrogant man, he, Rawlinson, and the other generals were on something of a learning curve. They had a huge, very new, untested army, and from 1916 onwards, floods of or conscripts pouring in, and they had less understanding than they needed, and a great inflexibility about how to win a modern battle against the Germans. And by 1918, it's clear that Amiens sort of makes Gary Sheffield's point, I think, that by 1918, that the lessons have been learned. There's another year of crisis in 1917, which will, for the purposes of brevity, have to skip over rather. And by the time we get to 1918, the flexibility that is required to win a modern battle is there. The Germans have always used a practice called Auftragstaktik, which means that the field marshals set the big strategic picture of cities to be captured and resources to be seized, and then leave it to divisional commanders and more lower-ranking generals on the ground to figure out how that's done, and to improvise and to react to local conditions, and to avoid the kind of the doctrinal rigidity that stifles armies. Hitler, obviously, after 1941, reverses all of this and believes that he is unstoppable and inflexible, and again introduces this rigidity where only he, the great genius commander, can tell anyone what to do. And as a result, there are a working system breaks down. The British kind of suss the German way of doing things and adopt it and adapt it. And the other thing that they managed to do before the Battle of Amiens is they managed to conceal effectively their preparations. The problem with the Battle of the Somme, or one of the many problems of the Battle of the Somme, is that the Germans knew full well that the British were coming. The British believed that they had concealed the building of new roads and railway lines and supply dumps and field hospitals and all these kinds of things up to the front line. But German spotter planes had managed to see this. So in the spring of 1918, Erich von Ludendorff, Hindenburg's deputy, plans and launches a series of surprise attacks in the west, the Ludendorff Offensive. These five surprise attacks they're close to achieving their goals of separating the British and the French army, forcing the British back to the coast, and forcing essentially a Dunkirk-style re-embarkation. And the Admiralty is giving this serious thought by about May 1918. The belief that the generals on the Allied side, the British, French and American generals, had in 1918 was that war would easily last until 1920. And Ludendorff believed that his second objective, to capture Paris, was one that was in sight. However, Ludendorff was something of a gambler. He managed to strip the German army of its best soldiers that he put into essentially frontline shock battalions and stormtrooper divisions, which were then flung at Allied trenches. Many Allied trenches were overrun. 70,000 British prisoners were taken within the first week of the spring offensive. But the cost to the German army was immense. Not only were a great number of these frontline troops lost, but the ability of the German army to replace them is almost exhausted. Essential equipment such as artillery pieces, horses, and munitions themselves, along with all the logistics that you need to keep an army moving, are worn out in this one last desperate gamble. Ludendorff believed this was essential because of the introduction of America into the war. The possibility of millions of fresh troops arriving in Europe was something that the Germans knew they couldn't contend with. It was impossible. And they knew that the productive power of the USA, the industrial power of the USA, would grind Germany into dust. So one last bid to win, to deal the Americans that had arrived in Europe such a bloody lesson that they would think twice about taking on Germany. This was the last roll of the dice. And always with these sorts of gambles, it either works perfectly or not at all. There's no middle ground, really. There was no opportunity for the Ludendorff offensive to partially succeed. And the Ludendorff offensive, once it runs out of steam without fully having defeated the Allies, the Supreme Allied Council becomes convinced under the French general, French Field Marshal Foch, who was the Supreme Allied Commander from 1918 onwards, that there's a historic opportunity to end the war has arrived. When the Germans are finally forced back at the Second Battle of the Marne, Foch calls together shortly afterwards a meeting of Haig himself, General John Pershing of the American Expeditionary Force, and Petain, the later collaborator with Nazi Germany and ruler of Vichy France, but at this point a field marshal and a figure of immense popularity and an expression of national pride. So Foch points out to the other generals that the Germans are now on the back foot and they have got a shortage of men, of munitions, of everything. And that the opportunity for the offensive that Foch had always hoped for has arrived. Haig and Foch had already talked about the possibility of an offensive in May that year. But when the British Fourth Army, led by Sir Henry Rawlinson, probed German defences using raids led by Australian soldiers and American soldiers who were serving under the overall command of the Fourth Army, it became clear that German defences were incredibly weak, surprisingly so. In fact, the thing that seems to have vanished from the German army is morale. The German soldiers who had replaced those who had been killed in Ludendorff's spring offensive seemed to have been reluctant to fight in the way that German soldiers had fought in the first 3 years of the war. And they were less experienced soldiers, so taking the risks necessary to repair defences, barbed wire, to dig gun emplacements and that sort of thing, these kinds of things are not being done. So the German trenches are becoming increasingly poorly defended. And this is really, really significant. It shows that the German army, after the experience...
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Of 1916, which were widely seen as a kind of a British tragedy at the Somme, but were equally traumatic and terrifying and bloody for the Germans, and also the experiences of early 1918, where the Ludendorff offensive that was hoped to win the war finally peter out. Many, many German soldiers at this point have lost heart. They've given up, and the rest of the Battle of Amiens tends to suggest this, as we shall see. Aware that German morale was suffering from prisoners taken back to Allied trenches in raids, and aware also that the German army was threatening the railway between Paris and Amiens, Foch, Haig and Pershing, and also Haig's deputy Rawlinson, believed that a limited attack at Amiens would be would achieve two goals. It would protect the railway, and also it would deal a major blow to German army morale. And it seems clear that the generals saw the dent to German morale as a key objective. The thing that went in their favour was that before Amiens was a large, dry, flat plain that was relatively uncrated, and so you could drive tanks across there. Now, they only chug along at about 8 miles an hour, and a large number of them would be knocked out by German guns. But tanks were the Allies' critical advantage at this phase. Another key advantage that existed was the fact that the British, by 1918, using sound ranging and aerial photography, were able to actually pinpoint where enemy guns were. And this was ideal for artillery. It meant that having an artillery attempt to destroy enemy trenches and German concrete bunkers, which the Somme had shown was virtually impossible. Some of the German bunkers were 40 feet below ground and were impenetrable to British shells. The fact that the Somme, Britain had used mainly shrapnel shells which kill men on the surface, and not high explosive piercing shells, was probably part of the problem. Anyway, being able to destroy the enemy's guns with accuracy was a clear advantage. And the movement of guns up to the front line, as I mentioned before, was done with immense secrecy. One of the methods for doing it was to dampen the noise of gun movement. So straw was laid on the roads, and lorries pulling guns had rope wrapped around their wheels. The noise, obviously, of an entire army moving is very, very noticeable to enemy forces that are really not that far away. The Germans were used to the British beginning their campaigns, beginning their great offensives with days of artillery bombardment. The Somme had seen terrific bombardment of German trenches. So the British refrained from doing this before Amiens. They make sure that the level of shelling is no higher than would normally be experienced. And this has an immense effect on the ability of Britain to take the German army by surprise. There are a number of German missed opportunities. The day begins with a bombardment from the British, And when the assembled Allied forces form up to attack, they present a very attractive target, close mass of infantry and tanks that a German artillery counter bombardment would devastate. But this never comes. When the Allied attack begins, within hours there are thousands of German surrenders. The Allies use low lying mist and smoke shells to hide themselves. And when they attack, they use armoured cars and faster tanks in order to speed up the pace of the attack, the momentum. So the speed of Allied movements on the first day, on the 8th of August 1918, was hugely important. The attack slows down on the 9th, and Germany begins to move reinforcements up to the line. And by the 11th of August, the offensive had slowed down because of the ability of the German army, which is one of its great kind of attributes, was to dig in machine gun nests and defensive positions and to make any further gains far too bloody to consider. So by the 11th, the combined wisdom of Rawlinson, Monash, who was the head of the ANZAC forces on the Western Front, and Curry, the head of the Canadian Army, decided that there was nothing to be gained from a further offensive. But if you look at the statistics, the Allies had lost 20,000 British soldiers and 24,000 French, and captured 29,873 prisoners and nearly 500 guns. Total German casualties were something like 75,000, of which 33,000 were missing and prisoners. So it was a huge proportion. And the impact of the Amiens in terms of territory and men was actually less than the Second Battle of the Marne, but the impact was much, much greater on the morale of the high command. It was the 8th of August 1918 is what Ludendorff famously refers to as the Black Day of the German Army. And there are countless reports from British soldiers and official British dispatches of Germans surrendering without any fighting. So the question is, I mean, who really wins or loses the Battle of Amiens? Certainly generals like Foch choose the right moment to attack, and the conditions are precipitous to victory. However, it seems to me that the greatest cause of German defeat at Amiens was probably Ludendorff, and he had created the conditions for a defeat long beforehand during the spring offensive. The exhausted, demoralised and unwilling to soldier on German troops surrendering in droves strongly suggests that. And this was the lesson that the Kaiser drew from Amiens as well. Ludendorff offered his resignation to Hindenburg, which was rejected. And the other thing that Hindenburg rejected was advice to withdraw to the Siegfried Line, to the borders of Germany, and to simply defend the Reich from invasion. There would be a shorter front line to defend, and more troops in order to reinforce it, and obviously the assumption that German troops would fight to the end to keep Allied troops off their soil. Wilhelm II, the Kaiser, was briefed on the 10th of August by Hindenburg, and the main thing that comes out of that meeting is that troop morale has collapsed, that it is no longer certain that Germany will win the war, or that Germany's soldiers will continue fighting the war. Now, to place this in context, the October previous, or the February previous, the Kaiser's cousin, the Tsar of Russia, Nicholas II, had really been swept away when he'd lost control of the army, and the results for Russia had been catastrophic. The Kaiser is acutely aware of what a mutinous army, a disenchanted and angry army, unwilling to obey orders, can mean for somebody like him. And on hearing the news of Amiens, he said, "We are at the end of our effectiveness. The war must be ended." The evidence tends to suggest that what was guiding Wilhelm's considerations was as much domestic concerns as it was military ones. The idea that the war must be ended quickly wasn't so much based in Wilhelm's acceptance that the big strategic goals of German militarism were no longer going to be met, but that enormous risks to Germany itself, not just of invasion, but of revolution, were around the corner. A defensive strategy, it was believed, making the Allies pay for every inch of land that they took, was hoped that it could bring the Allies to the negotiating table, and that talk of unconditional surrender by Germany could be avoided. But added to this, the scaling down of Germany's war aims simply to the defence of Germany was now high on the priority. So much so, when the Austrian High Command visited Germany at Spa on the 12th in order to ask for a resumption of offensive actions, obviously with large numbers of German troops to support them, the answer was no. The two generals who met them, obviously Hindenburg and Ludendorff, said that the possibility of a decisive blow or decisive victory does not exist, and that now simply peace feelers to the Allied powers needed to be put out. So Amiens, if we look at it, it from start to finish, really, wasn't the death blow to the German army militarily, but in morale terms and in political terms, it spells the end of the war. So Amiens is a greatly overlooked battle, by and large, and full credit to the generals Foch, Haig, Pershing, Monash, Curry and others, Rawlinson, is often ignored here, with the kind of the shadow of the Somme really taking up most of the kind of the mental energies of people that think about the First World War. Anyway, a couple of quick announcements before we finish. You can find my regular blog on the Huffington Post and now monthly on the IB Taurus book review blog. We'll be doing more reviews with IB Taurus later in the month. And thanks very much. We've started to have some donations for the hosting of the podcast. Some money's towards that. But obviously, any donations that we can attract all goes to keeping this podcast free and independent and coming to you every single week. Anyway, thanks very much for listening, and I'll speak to you on the next Explaining History podcast. All the best. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.